Welcome back, everyone. It's Nate with a private service announcement. In today's interview is with another age-old friend of mine, Keegan Beaulieu. He used to live with me on my street here, Baltic Place represent. But after moving across the country to Barrie, Ontario, having a stint in Manitoba, and moving back finally to the West Coast this past fall, he's working as a professional photographer for Whistler Blackcomb, and he's dabbled in bodybuilding, among other passions. In our conversation today, at the beginning of the interview, you hear some of the things that bodybuilding did, both for his body and his fitness goals and his desires to do shows and stuff, but also how it affected the way he looked at health. And, you know, it translated into a job working in a customer service position at a supplement shop. So we move forward in the interview and talk a little bit about what customer service techniques and strategies are necessary to make sales, especially with the experience that he had personally as a bodybuilder or moving in that direction. So we talk a little bit about that and some of the keys he's found to having successful sales. You know, we continue on and talk a little bit about photography, how it was a hobby for him, but you know, he was able to make a huge change in his life, make the move back out to the West Coast and find himself working with incredibly interesting people on one of the most beautiful vacation destinations on the West Coast there at Whistler. I still have to go actually, so if it hadn't been for COVID, I would have been over there right around now, actually, spending some time with him on the hill and catching up. But this is what we got, and you know what? I feel like I got a lot out of this interview. We to the point where he gave me things to think about personally. Patience was quite the theme towards the end of this interview. And he explains really well why his wildlife photography pursuits really developed patience in him. And so I get something to think about because I am so much a doer. I am so go, go, go that patience is not something that I always give a lot of time a day to think about, ironically. So I think you're going to enjoy this interview. There's something for everyone in what Keegan is saying. So wherever you are, sit back, relax, and enjoy the magic of my voice. I love IMAX. Jesus, thank you for this awesome day. And thank you that I get to spend just a quick minute with my good friend, Keegan Beaulieu. This is an exciting moment for me. And Lord, would you just give us some awesome conversations this evening? Amen.
Amen.
So hello, everybody. Welcome back to a private service announcement. Thanks for tuning in wherever you are right now. This is my friend Keegan. Keegan, say hi to everybody here.
Hello, hello.
Hello. Thanks for tuning in. You're in Whistler right now, that's correct?
Yeah, I am. West Coast. Really close to you, actually.
Not close enough, man. Not close enough. Well, we actually would have been together right now if it wasn't for COVID, but that's a story for later. So let me start this off here. Keegan, years ago, you actually were here. You lived on my street back in Victoria. And so as neighbors, we used to play cops and robbers together. I'd go over to your place and we'd game Final Fantasy on your console. You played on my soccer team at Prospect Lake, which was quite the learning experience because we got spanked all season right till the end.
Did we win a game?
The first season? No. No, we didn't.
Okay.
Yeah, that sucked. So we moved through that. And at the end of it all, you moved away around middle school, I think. Were you around 10, 11 years old? Yeah. Something like that, if I remember.
After that. 14. I think 14.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I was around like grade eight. So,
yeah.
Towards the end of middle school, Glanford, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
You know, when you left, Keegan, just like right now, you were shorter than me. And
what?
Bear with me here. You're shorter than me and probably just weighed a little bit less than I did, which I was an absolute beanpole back in the day.
There it is.
Yeah, there it is. You know,
things change quite a bit. At some point, you decided to go into bodybuilding, and you hit the gym real hard. Dorito Dream, as you used to call it.
Yes.
Honestly, your biceps are thicker than my neck. It's inspiring, really. My friend, run me through your typical day of training. And how does this compare to your workout days during previous bodybuilding seasons?
A lot has changed recently just due to COVID stuff. The ability to go into a gym and train with a decent facility and whatnot is obviously limited right now. The intention for me moving into the summer was always going to be decrease the amount of load that I was doing, so less powerlifting stuff and more circuits and functional training, trying to do a lot more calisthenics and bodyweighted stuff, because I wanted to get back to a more functional size. So overall, I think COVID stuff hasn't necessarily affected me as much as it would have if my intention was still to continue gaining size and doing what I was doing even a couple months prior to coming to Whistler, which was just training for weight, volume, anything that I could, because at the time I was working at a gym. So it was really easy to live that 9 to 5, you know, cardio in the morning, training in the evening, rinse and repeat. Right now, obviously stuff's different for a lot of people. I don't have access to a home gym or anything like that. So I'm making do with stereotypical at home YouTube push-up, pull-up, use some bands, that kind of stuff.
My grind.
My recent indulgence has been just a excessive volume of burpees, variations of that and whatnot, because I was finding myself neglecting cardio, which with the amount of food that I enjoy eating is never a good sign.
When you say functional weight, functional size, what does that actually look like for you?
I've seen both ends of the scale for me, a size that not only visually do I enjoy, like being a little bit leaner, but also feeling better. Like I can move around. I don't have to hold my breath when I tie my shoe. For context, last winter, so not this winter that just passed, but the winter previous to that, I got up to the heaviest I've been, which was in and around 240, 245, which was very impractical, very non-functional. The heavy breathing after you go up a set of stairs, that kind of stuff. And I realized looking back that at that weight, it didn't really serve the purpose that I thought it did. I was just justifying eating more food than I needed to just because I enjoy eating food. So a functional weight.
Calories. How many calories? Hit me up.
Okay. It was like 5,500, which in reflecting on
so that, that's like five meals, been, right?
It was 6 for me just because last meal was mainly just a shake or something like that. Meals were pretty consistent. Like the diet was pretty consistent. It was just more than I should have had. And with that, because it was relatively clean food, it was just an excess volume of it. I gave myself justification for having cheat meals once a week, which usually translated to 2 medium pizzas at Domino's, a pint of Ben and Jerry's, some cookies, you know.
For a sitting.
Yeah, that was a sitting. Yeah, so my once every week or once every 2 week cheat meal equated to like basically a day's worth of calories in a sitting. So,
oh yeah, dude, you don't keep up 245 with sitting there eating your kale salad, right?
No. And then with that, coming out of that and making a decision to drop some of that weight was easier than anticipated. And I think it's because I realized how much excess I was eating. So that initial drop was a lot
substantial.
Nicer than it was substantial, but it was a lot nicer than I thought too. Like I tapered off calories and I increased cardio a little bit, and dropped about 10, 15 pounds within the first 6-ish weeks. And immediately after that point, just felt way better. So at that point, made a decision to never really creep above 220, 225 again.
But there was a purpose for it, right? Like you were doing shows and that was the piece, right?
Well, the intention was to put on as much size as possible during the winter, to cut during the summer, to take that as a lead into a 14 to 16 week prep. Now, in hindsight, even on that bulk itself, I really shouldn't have gone above 225, 230. Because after that additional 10 or 15 pounds after that 230 mark were not quality pounds at all. That was just fluff, which I needed to lose at some point anyway. So if I could go back at that, I would have finished that bulk at 230 instead of 245. I just really like Domino's. So
Dude, Domino's. Actually, I'm more of a Panago's guy, but that's just because our school used to give them every Thursday. Shout out to PCS days. Now, you said, gotta shoot those shout outs. You said, oh, dang, did I just forget what you just said? Then I will jump back to that in a second when I remember it. But I did, like, you were explaining how there's a functional size, there's the weight that you got to, the weight that you're never going to go back to. And that was all for the purpose of the bodybuilding thing. Did you kind of reach where you wanted to be? So now it's a finished season of your life.
I wouldn't say it's finished. I would just say that it's reserved for now. I think the one thing that I've learned over, at this point, the decade that I've been training in some capacity, whether it be training with the intention to compete or just training to keep in shape or anything like that. I've been in a gym for the better part of 10 years, and stepping on a stage at some point is still very much in my bucket list and my thing of things that I want to do and I want to accomplish. I wouldn't want to do a show just to tick a box. I'd want to do a show when I feel like I'm at a point when I could genuinely compete and potentially take first place or something like that. I wouldn't want to enter a show and do that amount of work just to say that I did it and take home, you know, a participation trophy, for lack of better words.
Yeah.
With that said, priorities do shift. Leaving where I was before, so prior to coming out to Whistler, I was living in Brandon, Manitoba with my parents, my sister, and her son, so my nephew. That was a optimal environment for growth and for what I was planning on. That's when I was planning on doing a show and prepping into that. So that would have been this spring that just passed, because I came out here in October last year. So that spring up until October, I was working at Good Life Fitness there in Brandon as a, I forget the technical term that Good Life gives it, but essentially membership sales. The benefit to it was my hours were very consistent at a 9-to-5. So during that time, I was doing 2-a-day sessions. I would do abs and cardio in the morning, and I would train in the evenings. I was training 5 or 6 times a week. I had shed 15-ish pounds coming out of the winter going into Brandon. Like, I moved from Ontario at that point into Brandon in the spring. And during that time, I dropped weight and had met a decent amount of people and started networking with people who were coaches and who had competed in shows in and around Brandon in the Vancouver area, or not Vancouver, I apologize, Saskatoon region.
Right.
So the issue with the Prairies is there isn't a lot of shows, but Winnipeg has a big one every year. And my intention was to then prep for that show, which would have put me in and around this time frame now. So obviously my life has changed and my plans changed. Yeah. And due to that, my priorities needed to be restructured. So coming out here for the winter, I ended up taking a job that put me in a position where I needed to be able to ski, which is something I haven't been on in 14, 15
That's
years.
Right.
And even at then, I think I did a weekend with school at
Mount Washington. Yeah, of course.
Not something I would count as experience. So yeah. Coming out here, my intention was to once again lower that body weight just to be a little bit less heavy on the mountain, be a little bit easier to ski and be a little more flexible.
Like an absolute Yeti just barreling down the hill with a camera in his face. Hey, you want a picture? Oh, never mind. I'm already down the mountain.
Something I very rapidly learned was your body weight on skis makes a big difference when you're just trying to snowplow to stop.
Oh my God.
Doesn't work so well.
That's hilarious. Dude, when you were back in Barrie, you ended up working in a supplement store in that hometown, right? Yeah, okay. I forget what it was called. But I imagine it was a pretty simple gig considering you lived the life of a bodybuilder already. In terms of customer service, what's an ignorant or just plain uninformed comment you frequently received from customer noobs looking to get jacked?
Customer noobs. From the bodybuilding supplement side of things, because I worked 2 supplement stores back in Barrie. One of them was the sports supplement one, which is Pumped, and that's probably the one that you're referencing. The other one was a health food store, which I still worked in the supplements division there, but that was more multivitamins and digestive enzymes, probiotics, that kind of stuff, as opposed to protein powders, pre-workouts, BCAAs. I don't know if I can necessarily categorize it as ignorant customers, but just there was a lot of quote-unquote like bro science kind of guys. You know, I've been reading the forums on bodybuilding.com. Yeah, exactly. I'm training every muscle group 5 days a week. what do I need to do to get big? Is it mass gainer? Is it just protein? Like, what do I need to do? And the thing that I enjoyed is because I had a decent amount of experience training, I had really good mentors in my life, either people that I had trained at the gym with for a decent amount of time, or even my dad, who was a PT at the time, and worked in a health food capacity in a health food industry, as well as had certifications for things. So he was always a great outlet right. for information. I liked that job because it gave me an opportunity to talk to people, not talk down at people, but give them an opportunity to learn about a lot of things, which
talk
I realized if you
people
exactly educate, because sales in itself is a wonderful opportunity to meet new people.
Yeah,
but it can be a great opportunity to network and to make friends. Actually, a lot of my lasting friends and a lot of really good training partners that I had, I met who were customers at that supplement store. Yeah. So as far as ignorant, I've been talked down to a lot throughout my life and throughout my working life just by people who don't see, like, I don't have a degree in anything. So there's no substantial paperwork that says yeah. I'm verified to know what I know. A lot of it has been trial and error. And in talking to dozens and dozens of people to say, you know, does this work for you? Does this work for you? And then trial and error on myself. I've tried many different training splits. I've tried many different diets and found what works for me. And a lot of people, I think, came in, and a lot of people do go into supplement stores and health food stores looking for that one easy answer. What's that one pill I need to take to lose weight? What's that one thing I need to add to put on 20 pounds of muscle? Like,
right.
no answer is ever that easy, because if it was, there wouldn't be supplement stores. There would just be one brand of supplements that makes you lose weight and one brand of supplements that makes you massive.
Yeah, fair enough.
So people coming in with that expectation, I think, is fair based on the information that they're sourcing, right? You look
Which
at the average.
Wasn't enough.
No, and you look at the average person, and it's, where are you learning this information? Are you doing research online? Are you looking up articles? Are you looking up scientific studies? Probably not. You're just going off what, you know, Nancy and Samantha told you when you were at the park playing with your kids. And she said, you know, I've tried this new diet pill and it works great. And then she comes in looking for that, expecting for it to work for her. It may not. But the fact is, there's a lot more things that you need to consider before you make a decision.
So you would say to them, you don't know enough. Let me help you. And then they would be like, yeah, you're thick. Let's do this your way. Is that how it went?
10 out of 10 times, no. It's a lot of it's reading people too. I'm not saying I'm great at that, but if a guy comes in and he's reading the back of the labels and he brings two products up to the counter and is asking me what the difference between those two is, I'm guessing from how decisive he is with his like selection that he's done some research on a variety of products, because we carried a lot. And he's picked those two as being the two potential ones he wants to buy. And he just wants my input on those two, which is great, because the benefit of working at that that place and at places like that is a lot of the times you have brand reps coming in, giving you free product. So I had an opportunity to try, you know, a wide variety of supplements and figure out what I liked about one, what I didn't like about the other, just on a preference standpoint. Mm-hmm. But the person who comes in who is bro science-y, who doesn't want you know, a lot of technical input on anything, and they just want what's a good protein powder that's less than $50. Well, cool. Here's a couple that we have for you. So a lot of it's just catering out to the clientele that come in, you know?
Yeah, no, exactly. It's the customer's always right, Keegan.
Yes. Yes.
Every
Something
time.
I've been told a couple times too. It's great.
You know, there was a bunch of life circumstances that changed, and you've alluded to that already. And it brought you back to the West Coast. You know, you turned a page when you made the leap from being a photographer hobbyist to a professional. So you're back here on the West Coast. Back in the fall is when you came to work as a photographer at Whistler Blackcomb.
Yes, sir.
So again, customer service, but for a much different kind of service. When it comes to selling a product, whether protein powder or a family photo package, what's one tactic you've always used to seal a deal?
Building a rapport with that person. I think a lot of people assume building rapport takes time, but in the reality of it, depending on the customer and yourself, I mean, at the beginning of the season, I was not good at leaning on the sales aspect of the job. I enjoyed talking to people and I enjoyed finding out stories from people, because Whistler in itself, in a discussion I actually had with a client at one time, they said, if you took all of the homes in Whistler and replaced them with trailer homes, camper vans, and Mercedes Sprinters, the vibe in Whistler would very much be the same. And I agree to that, to even to today. So for me, it was just a really great opportunity to talk to people and meet a lot of people, because there is a wide variety of tourists, but there's also a lot of people from different walks of life and different places on the globe. I mean, half of the house that I lived in, which for context was 12 people, were from the UK. Right. Three of them were from Canada and two of them were from Ireland, Scotland region. So it was really cool just to have different food and discussions about, you know, different cultural stuff. But at its heart, I think whether you're taking photos of a customer on the mountain, family portraits, or you're selling protein, having a discussion with them to find out what they actually want was the bigger deal. The company that I worked for was Coast Mountain, and they had a, not cookie cutter, but they had a method that they wanted their photos done and certain poses that they wanted done that would give potential clients and customers a variety of options to pick from. The nice thing about Whistler is on a good day, you've got a wonderful view, a really wide vista, and a lot of options to pick from in regards to backdrops and to landscape. So if I'm talking to a customer and they're like, oh, we've never been here before, then automatically in my head, I know, okay, we're going to get a photo with iconic Whistler shots. You know, something that says you came here.
Right.
If they didn't have their own ski gears and they were just there as, you know, people walking and looking at the scenery and whatnot, I would offer my ski gear to them. Even though they're not in ski gear, it's a prop. It's something for you to pose with. Right. So if you're there and you're not there for a long period of time, then we're going to want to get the best shots that we can in the period of time that we have. So I think the one thing that I would say that helped me, you know, in your words, seal the deal would be actually having genuine discussion with those people and finding out what they want and doing my best to meet that need.
Well, it's interesting you say, though, like there's a piece of it where you read them and you're like, oh, yeah. So if you're saying things like I've never been to Whistler before, boom, you already have an idea. Like, let's get you in front of this mountain range, or like, let's get this iconic Instagram picture that everybody's going to want to post and hashtag Blackcomb, you know? So there's a piece where you kind of had your own homework that informed you a little bit on what actually to do with the family that walked up to you on the mountain.
Mm-hmm. A lot of that homework came just by doing it. Like I said, at the beginning of the season, I wasn't great at transferring a conversation about where people are from and how their trip is going into, hey, let's get some photos. This is where you can buy them. But I realized as the season went on and as I got more comfortable talking with people in that capacity, it didn't need to be two separate transactions. It could be, hey, you guys are here for a short period of time. How about we go over here and take some photos so that you can remember your trip? The nice thing about my job is I had a lot of flexibility and I wasn't coattailed by it just being commission. I was paid hourly as well as I had commission. So the need for me to be very, very sales driven wasn't 100% the focus. It definitely helped and it made for better paychecks. But at the end of the line, I wasn't pressured if I had a rough day where I didn't, you know, get a lot of photos of people. So to me, it made those interactions with those people a lot more genuine. Because
I was going to say genuine. It sounds like you're not pushing something.
Yeah, there wasn't this overhead cloud of, you know, all of my, the whole reason for me doing this is to get a paycheck, right? It was, I'm still getting paid hourly to be up here. And if I get the opportunity to take some family photos, or over the season, I ended up getting the chance to shoot two engagements, which one of them he told me about. And he was like, I'm planning on proposing, which was wonderful because then I know what to expect.
Yeah.
And the other one he didn't, which was a lot of on the fly. Oh, we're doing this now. Okay. But
dang,
those are really cool situations and experiences for me because I got to be part of that interaction. I got to be part of that memory for them. And then afterwards, we'd be working on the mountain and sometimes we'd come down afterwards and we'd be working in the gallery, which is where all of our sales were done out of. So a lot of the times, if you had a day like that where you were up on the mountain and then afterwards you were down in the gallery, you'd see those same people that you took photos of coming down, you chat with them. And then if they were interested in buying them or they weren't, either way, you know, that person had a laugh. down in the gallery and went like, you know, we would take jumping right. photos or funny family photos and they have a good laugh. So for me, that was the
like
the
me on Splash Mountain every time where I'm like, oh, my face is all getting splashed up and I have this weird like squinty look going on and I'm like, yeah, that's funny. And then I just walk away and didn't take the picture, but they have yeah. the option.
And the point is right now you're talking about that photo on Splash Mountain that you never bought, but you still enjoy.
See, the only difference is I didn't have Keegan saying cheese. It was actually some like chipmunk on a log that's like incognito, some DSLR. Yeah.
Some nanny cam.
yeah, that's interesting. In my work, building rapport is absolutely number one. And it's the more people I talk to, especially like sales stuff. I don't know. My buddy Curtis, he works in customer service, both for his business, but like in the past as a PT. And him and I have talked a lot about how much rapport is like the center of our different works. And it's literally the same thing you're saying. I can't get any sort of buy-in to do counseling based or therapeutic work with a person who doesn't feel comfortable, doesn't feel like I'm there with them. I would say rapport is the absolute foundation of what I do when I'm working with people. And I mean, that clearly is your answer as the seal of the deal. You can't do it without having some sort of rapport that's not like that ingenuine kind of I have alternative motives feeling to it. Like you come in and you're like, hey, I'm here to take some pictures. Let's do this. Let's have some fun. Feel free to check out the gallery. And then hopefully you buy something because at the end of the day, it does help you. But that's not the way that you come forward, and it's not super aggressive. And and obviously that's what gave you some success.
Like at its heart, any kind of customer service is you're dealing with people. So if you're not good at dealing with people, that's a skill that you need to work on. If that's an industry that you want to continue to be present right. in. Confidence is definitely something that took time for me to build. I'm fine having discussions with people and meeting new people, but when it was prefaced by my job, I'm there wearing a yellow jacket on a mountain, a very visually apparent, standing in front of a sign. Like my service is very obvious what I'm offering, right? Our sign said family portraits or mountain portraits. So as soon as you approach someone to talk to somebody for the first couple weeks or the first month or two, I felt like that person in, you know, a shopping mall where they're standing outside of a body shop or something and they make eye contact with you and then they start approaching you and they're like, would you like, and they're holding their hands out. You're automatically like, no. And you try to walk away. Yeah. That's what I felt like I was doing. But after discussion with people that I worked with, my bosses and some customers, the general feeling was that's not how it actually was. You know, this was a service that we offered, and depending on how you approached clients or you know, individuals, greatly influenced how they received you. So we had a wide group of people on the team, and some people were very sales pitchy and it worked out great for them during the season, but that wasn't something that I took to heart because that just didn't feel genuine to me. And right. you know, my sales may have been less than some other people who were a lot more pushy, but at the end of the day, we both, like me and that other person that I've worked with, or people who are a lot more sales savvy from a business standpoint as opposed to from a like person to person standpoint, the end result is we still had a good season, we still made paychecks, and we still had good photos and good memories at the end of the day. So no matter what your approach to it is, as long as you enjoy doing the work that you're doing, I think that there's some gray area there.
Oh, absolutely. I think any time that you and I spoke about your experience after the move and just getting situated with Whistler, you seem to be enjoying it. And, you know, I think that's what's kind of interesting about taking a hobby like photography and turning it into a passion job is that there's a piece of you that's always just going to enjoy being there doing the action of photography. And getting good pictures is not something that you had to worry too much about, because man, you had some stinking bangers, mate.
Thanks.
Love the pictures that I've seen just of Whistler, but you know, there's also some sweet wildlife photography stuff that you do as well. If you check out your Instagram, that's supposed to be a plug. including pictures of frogs, eagles, foxes, and bison. You've taken some sweet, sweet animal pictures. I guess a question I'd have for you is, what's your top three favorite animals to photograph and why?
Wildlife photography is something that I started out with because I wasn't great at taking photos of people or posing people. So to me, wildlife was a good segue. Hey, I can still work on photography stuff. It gets me outside. And I mean, I grew up watching Planet Earth in biology class in high school. So who doesn't like animals?
Come on.
But it gave me an opportunity to hone my skills without having any real critique on the other person's end, right? Because the other person is, you know, a bison or a frog. And if it's a bad photo, it's a bad photo. But it's not like he's going to be telling me, hey, delete that. So it gave me a good opportunity to work on the technical side of things, as well as develop my own eye and my own style. I think wildlife photography is still something that will be the main fuel behind my passion, but it may not be the way that I make my income from a photography standpoint, because making a full-time job out of wildlife or landscape photography is very challenging, whereas portraiture is a lot easier because you have a much wider option as well as wider client base.
But there's billions of people willing to pay for a photo, but there's zero animals willing to pay for a photo.
Well, the amount of people that want to buy, you know, a bison photo, for example, is probably more limited than the amount of people who are getting married. Right. So for me, I liked the job in Whistler because it gave me an opportunity to work on something that I wasn't particularly strong in. Right. But as far as animals, the three that I would definitely enjoy shooting the most would probably be birds of any kind. I've taken a variety of photos of birds, eagles, you know, chickadees, blue jays. There's a lot of starlings, which are actually confused for blue jays out here, but they're blue on the back and then their underbelly and their tail feathers are kind of black. And their call is a lot more annoying than blue jays, but they're in the same family. Like, they're about the same size. So birds as a primary, just because that got me pretty comfortable shooting a lot of motion, and adjusting settings on the fly. Cause if you want to get a bird who's flying, you need to have, you know, a faster shutter speed, and depending on what you want to look for as far as depth of field, like, you adjust your aperture and all that stuff. But then when it lands, let's say it lands in a tree under the shade, well, now you need to adjust your settings on the fly to get a good exposed photo of it in the shade, and then switch it back up for when it flies away. So that dialed in the technical side of things really good for me. As far as photos that I like to blow up, or, you know, my mom enjoys, bigger mammals. So bison, moose, black bears are really, really common out here. So I got to see that a little bit towards the tail end of the fall and the shoulder season. During the winter, obviously not so much, but now that it's spring, the black bears are popping back up again. And those popular spots that you could see them, they're back at those spots too. So I'm sure moving forward in the next couple of weeks or months, depending on what happens with all this COVID stuff, getting out to shoot bears will be a lot more of an option. But the third on my list, which is something I haven't actually gotten photos of, but it's been a 1 or 2 year pursuit, would be foxes, and specifically fox kits. So the timing that I would need to get photos of foxes, their den, and the babies fits a specific time range within the year. But I think that's probably my bucket list animal and my bucket list shot. In my brain, I've got 2 or 3 images that I would want to get good, not just a tick in the box, but want good enough that I would be able to print. And I think it's been enjoyable for me because I think this pursuit of getting that photo of a fox and that photo of fox kits kind of plays around their behavior and how playful they are, right? You look at a couple of foxes playing around, and it's an enjoyable experience. Last, you know, 2 years ago, I ended up finding a den and went there 2 days a week for 3 or 4 hours. I had like a little stand and a tripod, and I set my camera up, my lens, and I just sat there and looked at a hole in the ground from about 50, 60 meters away for 2 or 3 hours twice a week over the course of a month, and came out with no images, but I saw a baby fox or a kit once. And that was enough for me to take away from that, you know, 30 or 40 hours of time there. as worthwhile because I knew it was there, so it wasn't wasted, but yeah. it was enough to kind of like spurn me so that I'd be right. motivated for the following year.
You know, this actually really like reminds me of the times I've heard some of the back end on Nat Geo captures. I've heard like, I was looking for this shot for 3 years and it came in a moment. And like, that's my bad English accent, but like, there's just that piece. Yeah. You didn't even notice it. Good. It's that subtle. There's the piece of like, wow, they've been grinding and waiting. And for a lot of people, myself included, the patience required for that, I probably would have been like, screw foxes. I can look at that on the internet. But you did your piece. And I mean, what kind of perspective does that add for you on the whole photography as a field?
The nice thing about that, like the patience aspect of wildlife photography, has translated to portrait work over the winter for sure. Because you'll have clients who, or language barrier, for example, and you need to either walk them through by explaining it or walk them through certain poses by showing them. And for certain people on the team that didn't have that patience, it was a more frustrating experience. Whereas for me, it became a game of how can I get across what I'm trying to get across that they'll understand, but still make it an entertaining experience. And I think because there is this good foundation of patience on, you know, with a person, it's not going to take me 4 hours to get one photo. It shouldn't. I guarantee that person will quit before I do. But being willing to set aside however much time is needed to take the photos that they're happy with was, I think, the best translation in that capacity.
Instead of trying to bang out like a huge family photo package in like 32 minutes kind of thing. Mm-hmm.
And everybody's different. I mean, I had a group of 15. It was two different families. They were all from Mexico and they all bought matching onesies from one of the shops in Whistler. So they had winter jackets and pants on. I had no idea. They all get in the line. We take a nice family photo and then they all start undressing and they're wearing these matching onesies. And, you know, we had funny photos with the whole family, with the kids, with the grandparents, with the couples. And it was a great experience because that was a very big family, but the whole time it was really fun and it took a lot of time, but it was an enjoyable experience for everybody all around. And we got some great photos. They were happy with them. And on the flip side, I've had big families that just want that one big family photo. They don't want couples. They don't want kids. They don't want all the guys. You know, they just want that big family photo because nobody's ever together. So that takes 15 seconds.
Right.
Right. So those experiences are different depending on the people that you're with. But I think mentally, no matter what I'm going into, I'm expecting it to take X amount of time. And if it takes more than that, okay, that's fine. Because at the heart of it, I'm there to do a job.
Man, it's cool to think that the wildlife part of like the patience aspect of wildlife photography could translate into that piece with families.
I didn't realize that it played the part that it did until the midpoint or the end of the season when we were all kind of reviewing stuff and discussing stuff and people were, you know, venting not their frustrations with the job itself, but some challenges that they were having. I mean, I obviously had mine. It just wasn't on the patient side of things. So then I started reviewing, well, why am I more patient with this or less patient with that? And the thing that I can attest to that is being willing to sit down for 2 or 3 hours to get one photo. Or when I was living in Brandon, there was a bison enclosure about a 2 hour drive north. So I would try and time it for a period of time when the day had really good lighting. But either way, if I made that 2 hour drive and the first time that I went up, I drove around the entirety of the enclosure and didn't see them at all because they were just off the road or in the wooded area or whatever. So I made a 4.5 hour round trip, a tank of gas, for no outcome, but it was an enjoyable drive. The next time that I went up, I ended up getting a couple images, one I'm really happy with. So to me, it's a worthwhile takeaway. But if it's something that you enjoy doing, whether you get the outcome that you want or not, it's still an entertaining and an enjoying process, at least for me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, not something I could do, but I like... I like that there are people that can, because I appreciate the artistry in photography and I appreciate the beauty in nature and the beauty in animals and well, I mean, on a kind of cheesy note, the beauty in people, because that's kind of why I'm doing this interview project, because I want to hear about people and hear the interest in every person. And so there's a way that photography kind of is the visualization of uniqueness and interest in every kind of everything you capture.
I think, I mean, if we're being completely transparent here, the reason I leaned more towards photography than drawing or painting is because I really suck at those. So this was my consolation prize, if you will. At least it started out like that. Was I can't paint a mountain range like Bob Ross, but if I can take a photo of it that I like and I can throw it in a frame, we'll count that as a win.
Boom.
And it just turned into something a lot more than I ever anticipated that it would, which, you know, I'm really, really happy for.
Totally, man. And it's sweet to be able to hang something in your house, put it on your mom's, put it on your mom's mantle, and everybody's happy, right?
I mean, I think she's printed off more of my work than I have.
That's definitely how it works, man.
But yeah, it's nice to know there's at least one person in my corner that's like, oh, this is really nice.
Sweet, man. I have, we're coming to the end of the interview, but I do have one question that I've decided is a little bit of a recurring theme on the podcast, at least during the COVID-19 kind of sequence of events that we're in. Yeah. I've been asking people this as a final question, and I want your opinion. What's one thing you miss about the pre-COVID days that may never be the same again?
The COVID stuff in general hasn't affected me as much as I think it has other people, so my outlook on it might be a little bit more relaxed. I think one thing prior to COVID, especially in a place like Whistler, compared to now and potentially moving forward, is just how simple it was to meet new people, to network, and just the general lack of anxiety around social gatherings and whatnot. Whistler is a very social place, and the frequency that you go into a bar and it's standing room only, and even then you don't have a place, so you end up going to the next one. And Whistler's relatively compact in that, so if you had a group of 4 or 5 or 10 people, you just end up moseying around until you find a place that you all want to settle down for the evening and hang out. I think moving forward, there might be a very long delay on the time it takes for things to get back to what they were. I'm not saying that restaurants and bars will be closed forever, but I think the period of time it takes before everybody's good and comfortable with themselves. I mean, the government might open things up and it might be fine and they say, yeah, go for it. But you're always going to have those people. And even within my social circle, there's, you know, the camp is split half and half. We're all adults and we're all responsible. So we're taking the necessary courses of action that we need to based on what the government's telling us. But half of that group is very concerned. And the other half is just looking forward to the day when they can go back out and hang out with their friends and go skateboarding at the skate park or go mountain biking without having to worry about getting a ticket because they're standing more than 4 feet apart or less than 4 feet apart. I think that this as a global side of things has definitely opened people's eyes to the simplicity of a lot of things in our life that we may have overlooked. I think any big scale event, pandemic or just global event, does that to people in general who are relatively aware. I mean, you could be still living under a rock and not know what's going on, but if you're informed or watching news or reading stuff online, then you kind of know how significant this is. And because of that, it's going to inform some of your decisions moving forward. But I think the biggest thing for me that I see is it just taking a decent amount of time before people start really getting back into the social side of things.
In some ways, it may never even go back to being the same carefree, like just social gatherings the way it always was. Like, there may be a new normal in what big gatherings look like in Whistler, outside of Whistler, even like event center, big concerts and like festivals. Yeah. And I imagine any of those things would be affected.
Well, how many times did you go out and hang out with people, even if you had a cough or a cold or a little bit of a flu, or vice versa? How many times were you at social gatherings or birthday party where somebody's like, oh, I'm just feeling a little under the weather, right? No, I always stay home if I'm sick, or the amount of people who go into work sick, right? Because we don't have enough sick days or whatever. So for this, I think it's brought attention to, you can't say if you're sick, stay home, or if you're feeling ill, don't go out, when it's always just the flu. But now there's been something that's global scale. Hey, if you're feeling sick, stay home. It might be something serious, more serious than just the flu. I think potentially moving forward, you're going to have a lot more people who are more sticklers for, oh, you've got a cough, why don't you go home?
I guess the bouncers at the doors of the club are going to have a stamp that says, I tested negative for COVID before you walk in.
Just green and red. Approved. Denied.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting, man. These are crazy times. And I wish that I wasn't such a social person, because that has been so challenging for me, not being able to get together with a large group of people, even a small group of people. It doesn't really matter. People, that would be nice. Yeah. At this point,
social interaction.
Yeah, the social piece. Like, I'm. I don't know if it's even a thing, but I'm a hyper extrovert. So, like, part of a private service announcement is just satiating me enough that I get to talk to people who I haven't talked to in a while and hear stories that I crave to be a part of, but I'm here in my room.
It's
different.
Man, you got to get into wildlife photography. It'll give you some patience.
Dude, I'm gonna get a fox picture in one day.
No, hold that over me for the rest of my career.
Keegan, thank you for your time tonight, man. This has been really enjoyable. For anybody that's interested in more of the conversation that me and Keegan have had, feel free to reach out to myself and I will extend some questions to Keegan if that is something you are looking for.
Thanks
for your time,
man.
Any last thoughts, or I guess we're good.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to shamelessly plug, but
please do.
Referencing earlier when you were supposed to have my IG plug and you didn't. For anybody who does want to look at photos of bears and not foxes, it is Keegan, my last name, then my first name.
I'll put it in the show notes and it's there. It's sweet, man. Such good stuff. If I still had Instagram,
reinstall. It's a click of a button, my friend.
Thanks everybody for tuning in, and I hope to have you here with me on the next episode of A Private Service Announcement. Peace. Boom. That's a wrap. There's another interview completed. Thanks to Keegan. My friend, that was an amazing interview. I learned a ton from you and your stories were awesome. Thanks for your time. For anybody that was listening, I strongly encourage you to go open up your Instagram app and search at Beaulieu Keegan. Spell it the same way I spelt it in the show notes. I guarantee you there's a lot of vowels and I've messed up more than once getting that spelling right, but it's worth it because that landscape and wildlife photography, next level. So, so beautiful. If you have suggestions, thoughts, ideas for me for future episodes on A Private Service Announcement, please, I love your feedback. Please get in touch with me on my Facebook page, A Private Service Announcement, or just reach out to me and direct message me. I love hearing from you, and if you're interested in doing an interview with me in the future on this show, please reach out. We'll make something work. As always, thanks for listening in. That concludes today's Private Service Announcement.